Well, good morning and welcome to the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio out of Northfield, Minnesota, the home of cows, colleges, and contentment, of course. We are 1080 on your AM dial, and that has, well, let's see, in September will be 50 years. And, of course, new to you and everyone, The One, FM 95.1. In studio, I have a gentleman. The last time I saw him, he was in a bathrobe. Good morning, Don.
Good morning.
Don Hill is my guest this morning. And, Don, a little bit of chit-chat here before we get into some maybe serious stuff is, and when I say serious, you know, heads-up stuff. First of all, I never thought of looking up your telephone number in the phone book. And I know I had your cell number, but I couldn't find it because I have switched phones since then. So I thought, well, I'm just going to stop by his house at a convenient time. So 8:15 Wednesday morning, I rang your doorbell. Marilyn answered the phone. You guys were just up and having your cup of coffee. May have been up for hours, I don't know. But in your bathrobe, having a cup of coffee, invited me in. And I just wanted you to come on in and say hello. It's been a while. I got a couple of questions for you. First of all, did you know Bob and Lila Winter? Did you may have had them as students, Lila?
I don't think so. I'm sure they're probably there, but I don't recall, you know, them at all.
Yeah, you had on thousands of students over the years.
Yes, yes.
Well, as you probably know, unfortunately, she passed away last weekend. And her funeral is at 11 o'clock this morning out of St. Dominic's, and my wife and I were there last night to pay respect to Bob and his large family. And have you ever been in St. Dominic's?
Yes, I have.
Okay. Well, it was out the door, the line.
Really?
But they got him come in, and then they faced towards the back, towards the cafeteria in the aisle to the left when you're facing going out, and then all the way through the cafeteria and then down. It was till 7 o'clock, and at 8:15, the last people were there. But our condolences to Bob and his family, extended family, and may she rest in peace. A very fun gal. Said what she had in her mind, kind of like you, Don. Here's another one I got for you. Ready?
Sure.
Okay, I don't want to do all the talking. Okay. See the shirt I have on?
Yes.
Where do you think I got the shirt?
I have no idea.
Well, what was the men's store in downtown Northfield for many years?
Grootner's?
No. Downtown Northfield.
Well, Grootner was here at one time.
You know, Grootner would have been before me.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. When I came, it was Freeman's the Hub.
Freeman's the Hub, of course.
The man's store in downtown Northfield.
That's right.
I bought this shirt and two others similar to it. The year Danny went out of business.
Oh.
And that would have been 1986, I think. So this shirt's gotten a lot of wear, over 30 years old.
Good shirt.
Yeah, Pendleton. Nothing but the best. Say, I ran into a guy, Don, who was is a teacher in Wisconsin.
That's too bad.
Okay. Can you move that mic a little bit closer so I can get more energy in your voice?
Okay.
There you go. So now you already said it. That's too bad because what he was telling me, I was taken aback. But why did you say that's too bad? What's the reason?
Well, they've had a lot of trouble with collective bargaining, and the governor took away, or along with the legislature, took away their bargaining rights. At a time when they were probably the most active collective bargainers in the country around public education. And so I've always felt kind of bad about it because I know that it kind of eats away at the salaries, fringe benefits, stuff like that, makes it tougher.
Well, I asked the guy if he would come in this morning because you two would have had a great conversation.
Yeah.
And he's a teacher in a public school in Wisconsin on the high school level. Mm-hmm. And the dollars that he says he has lost since they withdrew the bargaining position for public employees, that,
right.
That included all public employees,
yeah. Yeah.
He said that it's terrible. He said he's losing about $12,000 a year.
Really?
Yeah. And since its inception or whenever.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so I can understand that you can't get an increase.
Right.
But other things that happen that maybe you can address, because you were president of the MEA and also the CEO of the Teachers Association in Rhode Island,
yeah.
Is trickle-down effects that it has in regards to education.
Yeah.
Now, he contends that Wisconsin was a leader in education ranking in the United States,
yeah.
And that they have dropped considerably, and that the good teachers, I'm putting everything into one basket, so,
sure,
you know,
yeah.
But are coming to Minnesota and looking for jobs in Minnesota. They can mm-hmm. be educated in Wisconsin, raised in Wisconsin,
right.
Worked in a teaching position in Wisconsin, and they're out of there. And the border state of Minnesota is one that is picking up some pretty good teachers.
Sure.
He said that also that young people, let's say you do your college thing in 4 years.
Yeah.
So people 22 years old that had just gotten done student teaching are now being hired by school districts.
Right.
And that... his contention is that the inexperience, the reason they're doing that is they come real cheap.
Yep.
And they can be hired. So
can you
give me a little more insight on what you think is going on? It sounds like a terrible deal to be involved in as a educator in Wisconsin.
Well, I was kind of on the lead edge of collective bargaining in public education or public employees in Minnesota. And so the battle that we had over the rights to bargain seemed to be philosophical without an economic discussion about it, in that it was kind of anti-union, anti-organizing, kind of anti-anything that smacked of giving teachers and public employees the right to actually compete for money with the government. Well, it doesn't take very long before the system kind of falls apart. And what happens is that it's important that employees have the right to be in the battle over salaries. You don't always have to win, but you have to have the right to be there. And without that, it just kind of deteriorates, because as management looks at the budget, this is what we got to work with, and they try to divide it up. And as employees, we have to force that budget to get larger. Like, for instance, when we got into collective bargaining here in Rhode Island, or in Minnesota, before I went to Rhode Island, they had the same problem. we knew that we had to force the legislature to put more money into Northfield. And the only way that was going to happen is if there was real trouble in Northfield and the school boards and the legislators decided they had to have more money, or they were going to have this kind of conflict all the time.
When you say Northfield, you mean Minnesota?
Yeah, well, but also Northfield.
Oh, okay, okay.
Because we were in the middle of bargaining here in Northfield, it kind of drove me into the MEA. The meetings that I went to as we collectively started to get together as bargaining units needed leadership, and I just kind of stumbled into it at the time, and I was more aggressive than most, so I ended up leading the pack. And it was pretty important, because to us, it's like the soul of our earning money. And in a free enterprise system, you got to earn money if you want to be a part of the system. And to pretend that public employees don't belong in that is a real mistake, because it, for instance, I think that Wisconsin, I feel badly that the Wisconsin teachers, the Wisconsin Education Association, didn't do a better job of protecting their rights to bargain, and they haven't been able to organize to get them back, which is really tragic. And there's always the, well, it's an old adage I have about the political system. You have to fight just as hard to keep what you got in a big battle as you did to get it. Because the same people that didn't want you to have the right to bargain still don't want you to bargain. So you can't get the law passed and then pretend it's always going to be there. You know, you have to fight constantly to maintain it, to keep it, to be an integral part of the system. And I feel very comfortable believing that you have to have this kind of conflict in order in a democracy, in order for the numbers to work. Otherwise, public employees pay a terrible price with every downfall in the economy or every change in the economy. The employees are the first people to get stuck, and it's the same with public employees. You know?
Well, this individual that was and still is a teacher in Wisconsin said that when he served as the leader of the union, if you will, for his school district, and he said that because one of the discussions was, well, if you guarantee teachers X amount of dollars and an increase every so-and-so, or else they'll threaten you and say, we're not going to educate your kids, you got to have a position of power or whatever. And he said that during his term that they had four dismissals that they made at the school district, and two of them were administrative dismissals. Mm-hmm. And they had that opportunity. In other words, what I think the party was suggesting is that weren't foxes watching over the chicken den. They were actually seriously considered the fact that people that aren't doing the job can be dismissed.
Right.
And, of course, I think most people that aren't totally aware of what's going on in regards to that have the belief that you can't fire a teacher.
Right. I know they say that, but one of the biggest items in the budget when I was at the MEA was in defense of teachers' rights and legal help for teachers being fired, because they were being fired all the time.
And for any particular reason?
Well, usually incompetence or more likely personal behavior that was borderline. There's always been a problem in the teaching profession of how you react to management, whether you because teachers are pretty independent, you know, they get their assignment, they're off into their classrooms or their organization, do whatever that they do, and they aren't managed very well by the school system. And the reason is that they're pretty independent. You know, it's an independent kind of job when you're given a responsibility to motivate these kids, and then you're stuck. You got to do it one way or the other. And the only way to measure it usually is outcomes and tests and a lot of false kind of measurement. So there's this constant battle that goes on between the players. We were pretty lucky in Northfield when I was teaching here, and we had a really great staff and pretty good administrators, and we worked together pretty well. We were at the bargaining table all the time, but we still got together, and we
seems like you were always
together.
At the geez, when is enough enough, you know? But so has the pendulum swung to the way that there are more administrators that are more demanding of teachers in regards to crossing the I's and, or dotting the I's and crossing the T's and all kinds of paperwork and reporting and burdensome things to do outside of standing in front of the class and teaching of social studies.
Well, I'm sure that it's there. I'm not real sure that it's changed a whole lot. There's a lot of people who enter the profession, both as administrators and as teachers, with the idea that they're going to change the system with new and innovative ideas. But we're talking about a people business that drives you right back to the relationship between human beings over and over again. And there's not much in the way of models to make that work other than the fact that the people involved understand they have a job to do and they got to work together to get it done. And when you get to top-down management with teachers, you're usually going to be in trouble because it's a pretty independent thinking job.
Well, I recall I had an exchange student who was very bright. Mm-hmm. And I recall there, and you know who the person is, and they're retired, and I won't mention the name, mm-hmm. but I recall complaints for generations, three generations minimum, about this particular teacher.
Sure.
And even the exchange student did not like this guy.
Sure.
And I should have said person. But anyhow, the bottom line in doing my interviews with people and all that, I was amazed that there were more people fond of the individual than disliked him.
Right.
And he was in a very disciplined subject, which meant you must study.
Sure.
The old logic stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can't take the word of one person about an entire industry.
Yeah. Well, that's true about a lot of us. Legends of teachers and students and the way situations are handled. And, I mean, all of us have stories about our education and teachers that we had. And, I can remember when we got back an alumni gathering in our high school. And we were sitting around, and the guy sitting next to me, he brought up and talked about he still had this terrible grudge against the teacher. It was 30 years later. It's still close in his mind about what a rotten teacher this was. And I had to explain to him that that was my favorite teacher. I mean, I thought that she was the very best. I still think very positively about what happened in our classes and stuff. So it's kind of like the human thing when you got so many human beings involved, you got so many likes and dislikes. It's a hard profession, you know, to be loved.
I think it actually can be melted down to one thing, and that is be prepared, do the lesson. Teacher will like you. You will like teacher.
Yeah. Well, that's probably true. Yeah. If you're paying attention, it really helps.
And then, of course, there are teachers that try to help you get things accomplished, and you don't fulfill their thinking that you'll come around with kindness, and you just take advantage of them. And then they divorce you.
Yes, yes.
And then you feel like, I sound like I'm talking about myself. It's 21 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. My guest this morning is a gentleman named Don Hill. Don was the social studies teacher.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And this gentleman I invited to come in because you two really had a great conversation. I told that, you know, of course, I know you as a coach, you know,
sure.
Coach Don Hill. And he said, what did he teach? And I went, I don't know. And my wife says, I think he was a social studies teacher. And he says, oh, yeah, social.
Yeah.
What do you think he meant by that?
I don't know.
It was like everybody takes social studies or something.
Right. In some ways, you know, I figure it's the most relative class that kids are taking. if it's in social studies, parts of history and social studies, because it's about all of us, all of it, the human existence, the how it all is put together. And math teachers or language teachers or people who open a book get on the blackboard and they want to hammer home these pertinent things and they got to have them or, you know, life, you aren't going to be able to progress. Whereas in social studies, you will progress no matter what happens. And it could get pretty sloppy, I suppose, in the eyes of rigid kind of thinkers. But I thought that it was probably some of the most important things I ever did for students was in social studies class, where I was able to help them kind of find themselves in this mess we're involved with, the politics, the religions, all of the aspects of the human condition. And you're free to go pretty much anywhere in that course, which makes it a kind of entrepreneurial kind of course, if you want to make it that. I mean, you can, and I suppose you could slough off on it, and there probably are teachers that do, and they get a bad reputation because of that. I don't know.
It's 24 minutes after 10 o'clock. Good time for me to say, Don, when's the last time you were at the quarterback club in Northfield?
Yesterday.
And I didn't know that, did I?
No.
Okay. What'd you have?
I bought chicken for my wife and some lasagna for myself.
Oh, cool. All right. And, of course, Quarterback Club is a sponsor of the Wayne Eddy Affair for years, and I appreciate that and invite you to go there today for their fish sandwiches. If you're one of those individuals that just seems like fish and Friday go together, well, they have it, three different kinds. In addition to that, of course, are the only place in Northfield does flame-broiled burgers and their roasted chicken, as Don just mentioned. Delicious. Now, I have seen people eating their, did you say ravioli?
Lasagna.
And I'm a chicken guy, you know,
sure.
And ribs.
Okay.
Oh, I love their ribs. So anyhow, I invite you to stop into the Quarterback Club breakfast from 6 to 10 every morning, Monday through Saturday. Don Hill is my guest on KYMN Radio. You mentioned something about religions and cultures and politics in social studies. Mm-hmm. How much do you think the level of high school teachers trying to influence a classroom one way or the other, politically, left or right, Democrat or Republican?
I don't know. We're advised not to, but I've thought about this quite a bit lately because of the election of Donald Trump. It kind of changed things and the situation, in that I believe that there's kind of a lowering of the job of presidents, much easier to criticize. It's been we've elected someone who criticizes the system a lot, so it would be tough on a classroom teacher to not be able to allow the kids to respond and to think about that, and getting kids to think about politics early on, I think, is pretty important. And the reason for that is that too many of us enter life with our parents' opinions pretty much solid in our minds about what's right and what's wrong. And it takes a long time before we start thinking about it ourselves. And it's not that difficult. You know, it's not that it's kind of simple when you consider about what kind of government you want and what do you think people's rights ought to be, that kind of thing. And so from an education standpoint, you don't have to really be a Republican or a Democrat or an independent. The system is still there for you to examine.
Well, in liberal colleges across the nation, whether you're talking about Brown College out where's it?
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island, yeah. That's why I brought that up. And others, there are a lot of professors that profess their disgust and dislike of the current president.
Sure.
in the classroom and will somewhat ostracize individuals that have a different opinion and won't let them express that. Mm-hmm. And that those individuals, I think, are on the wrong track. I think they should have an open classroom and allow discussion.
Sure.
And the majority of those students are probably liberal. That's what they call liberal arts college, maybe. But I just wonder if maybe that the educators may be poisoning the mind of people in regards to the hatred, literal hatred of our current president. Mm-hmm. I mean,
well, he does a pretty good job of allowing us to do that. One of the problems of higher ed, I guess, in politics, is that the higher ed instructors all the way from the beginnings to the doctorate degrees and the all the way through, they have a tremendous amount of freedom for their what they teach and what they believe, and
because of that tenure.
Well, because that's what the college is. They want it that way. I mean, they a little bit of, they need difference. They need diversions. They need ideas. They need energy for ideas. And so it gets to be the place where I think had worldwide, historically, the college campus is where an awful lot of our attitudes start to change, where our culture changes, sometimes entrenched, I'm sure sometimes terribly entrenched. But the I think in the United States anyway, it's pretty free practice from the standpoint of politics. Nobody's going to tell you exactly how you got to think about things. If you're over the top and that's all you do, you probably won't last long because it'll be too controversial. I know that we had some of that at Carleton when I was teaching in high school. There was kind of a crossover there between because within the the Carleton College faculty, we had wide variety of characters, and it spilled over because their kids went to high school, and so there was a little bit of friction there on and off about what you should be teaching. But it was really amazing all the time that I was teaching. There was a great cross-section of conservatives and liberals.
Oh.
And a whole lot in between that really didn't deal with it. They probably voted all the time, but that you couldn't get into an argument with them because they just didn't want to do it. They didn't want to take part in it. It's like not arguing about religion or politics for some. Never my problem, but for them it was.
What would did you get chastised by your students' parents for saying something negative or positive of one party or the other?
I never did, no. I know that it was there because I had the same arguments with their parents at times. So I know it was there, but I guess I was at least polite enough to not try to preach. Well, I changed. When I came to Northfield, I was pretty conservative. I had actually caucused with Republicans here in Northfield first couple of years I was here. And just living here and the change of times that I'm so liberal now, I probably belong in jail. So.
I tell the story that I don't recall which time I enjoyed your joining me on the air. Don, if you went up to the state legislature and they slapped a check in front of you, signed, and you could put in any amount of money you want on there, would you go back next year and ask for more? He said, well, of course I would. I tell that story a lot because that shocked me. Yeah.
It's very true. And the reason is that life goes on. It really does. There are very few times when we can say, now that's, we took care of that, because you've never taken care of that, because there's new people, new environment, new everything. It's a tough job being a legislator, really is, at any level, because of that. You know, you run on a platform. You get elected and you run into all these other things that you never thought of, you know, and they just jerk you around something fierce. And some of the leadership, pretty stubborn and stick to what they really believed, and it takes a revolution to get rid of them.
Well, as you know, the 2nd District has a conservative representation now. And I'll have the gentleman in, hopefully, during their recess. And what I've learned in my years of not a licensed lobbyist, but a liaison lobbyist for the broadcast industry, is that these guys get up in the morning and they have to get in 4 hours of solicitation on the phone constantly to their... and now with the media mix, we have emails and tweets and all these other things every day. We're $10. $10 will get us over the top. Blah blah blah. And they have their hands out constantly.
Yep.
I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican or independent. Your hand is out wanting money to get reelected. Yeah. There was something I think in this morning's paper about. Somebody was ahead of a Democrat was ahead of a Republican in fundraising, and you know what came to my mind? Oh, whoever's got the most is going to buy the election.
Yeah, that's
although that didn't prove in the presidential election passed.
Right. Yeah, it's you know, everybody the in office and people running for office, they all say the same thing. It's a terrible way to run an operation, but we don't really have any other way to do it unless we paid for all that with taxpayers' money. And that would take away the rights of the wealthy to own us. So it's a different kind of situation, you know. It's a, freedom is a, you know, strange concept that we live with that you know, boxes us up regularly.
Well, one of the things that I think a lot of people, including myself, don't think of very often is there is one rule on the book, and that is property doesn't vote. And I mean, when you think about it, you know, you have people from the Twin Cities, let's say, own property in Northfield, whether it's retail or commercial, and they can't vote with their property taxes.
Right.
That is a good... part of the Constitution.
Yes, it neutralizes a lot of the
power.
Could
you imagine if you could, you know, if Target could vote in your city election as a corporation?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, let's lower the taxes here and get a little more increment financing. 26 minutes before 11 o'clock. Any more on that subject? I got other ideas to chit-chat about.
Not really. No.
Do you have anything that you want to chit-chat?
Well, I'm really interested in today's headlines in this Minneapolis paper about St. Paul teachers going out on strike.
Let's do it right after this important timeout. We just got done talking about taxes, and guess what?
All right, America. H&R Block has some good news. For a limited time only, you could get a refund advance loan of up to $3,000 the same day you file at Block. That's right. You could get up to $3,000 today. No interest. Told you it was good news. To learn more or find participating locations near you, visit hrblock.com. Get your taxes won. Optional tax refund related loan from BofI Federal Bank. Not your tax refund. $500, $750, $1,250, or $3,000 loans offered. Approval of loan amount based on expected refund and other conditions. Funds loaded on prepaid card. Tax returns may be e-filed without applying for this loan. Fees for other products or features may apply.
H&R Block, 1300 Bolenbacher Drive in Northfield. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5. Walk-ins are welcome or call 645-6281 for an appointment.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
Welcome back to the Wayne Eddy Affair on your radio station. This is KYMN, 1080 AM for nearly 50 years, and now 95.1 FM, The One. Don Hill is my guest this morning. Don Hill is a former neighbor of mine. He also is a former Northfield Raider football coach and teacher and a former president of what was then the MEA, which is now Education Minnesota, I believe.
Right.
And also was the CEO of the Rhode Island School Education Association.
Right.
Got that. Okay.
Yeah.
I stopped at your home Wednesday morning to ask if you'd come and join me, see what's up, because I always find you interesting. And I noticed in the Minneapolis Tribune this morning the top of the fold headline was St. Paul schools threatening to strike, and that would be on an independent school district level. How does that work?
Well, it's the salaries and fringe benefits of the St. Paul teachers, plus other items that have to do with working conditions and whatever, are evidently have reached a point where the teachers believe that the school district, the St. Paul School District School Board, is dragging their feet about change, about helping a situation out. And the state gives the public employees the right to bargain with their employers. And the situation is kind of worn itself into this position. The earlier articles about this situation took a kind of a shot at the leadership of the union, because one of the union members wrote a letter to the editor, or did an article for the Minneapolis paper, that stated that she was against what the union was planning on doing, and the reason was she didn't think the kids should have to pay the price of this collective bargaining situation. And it looks like things aren't going to get worked out. I mean, it looks like the strike is pretty obvious. At least the teachers have okayed the union, their leadership, the right to call a strike.
10-day notice,
yes.
Which is by law.
Yeah.
They have to give a 10-day notice.
Yeah.
You and I are probably from the old school.
Yeah.
And in California, it's absolutely crazy, but it's getting as crazy in metropolitan school districts, and that is now everybody has to have a special teacher.
Yeah.
I mean, when I'm not only talking about special ed, but I'm talking about languages.
Yeah.
You have to have a Hmong teacher. You have to have a Hispanic teacher. You have to have a Swahili teacher. You have to have a Jewish teacher. You have to have, not those people in place,
sure,
but teachers that can communicate with these particular students.
Yeah.
And I lived on the west side of St. Paul for near Humboldt High School for many years, and things have changed up there. I had an opportunity to go to Harding High School a couple of years ago. I met with the principal there, and crazy thing, when I met the guy, I was getting my high school degree.
Mm-hmm.
I hadn't had it for 50 years, and we were having our 50th class reunion. I had broken my toe on our class picnic, and when I went to get my diploma, they wouldn't give it to me because I owed them $35. So after 50 years, I thought, you know, and I contacted the principal and said, he said, well, I have to check it out. And they did. And so he said, come on up here. We got something for you. So I went up there, and a bunch of people were around. And one of them was from Northfield, you know, commutes to Harding High School in St. Paul every day. So he gave me one of these mortar caps. Is that what they're called? And it was too big. But anyhow, and he did the little flip from one side to the other, and I gave him a check for $35, and he gave me a bill for like $289 interest or something like that. And then he gave me the check back, says donate it to the reunion fund.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a thrill. It was fun.
I'll bet, yeah.
And so the point I was making, when I walked into that school, which I call the new school, and it's been there for over 50 years.
Yeah,
but I went to the old school. I couldn't believe the different cultures that were being represented at the east side of St. Paul.
Yeah.
And east side of St. Paul, its cultures are many.
Yeah.
So teachers have to deal with that.
Yeah, school districts are not the first, they're not the leading edge of social change. They kind of follow whatever it is that happens. But they, I went into my son's third grade classroom in Burnsville. My son Gary is a teacher there. You'd have thought it was United Nations representation. I mean, they were all there, you know, all the colors, all this, everything was there, which really actually kind of beautiful. Those kids are growing up together, being together, and it's part of the growth of the country. And we're going through this terrible struggle right now over immigration, and a lot of that is backlash from things that we were just talking about here, is that people are not that anxious to be overrun by a different culture. I mean, it's just difficult. And so public education's caught right in the middle. And they've done a pretty good job, I think, of representing or being able to keep up, but they'll never keep up with teachers of all of the immigrants that show up here. There will always be behind the curve, you know, trying to make up, but you have to do it because that's who we are, you know.
Well, there was a radio personality in the Twin Cities about, oh gosh, it must be maybe 10 years ago. And they were talking about the expense of educating minorities in of all walks, you know, Korean Hispanic or whatever. And English as a second language type deal. Mm-hmm. And his comment on the air, which GD, which I would never use on the air, but you can do it. FCC says that's fine. And assimilate. And he meant it. And he was sincere in his belief in what he's thinking, and that is, if you're coming to America, assimilate. You participate in our country, in our language, da-da-da-da-da. How many of us have immigrant grandparents that spoke Norwegian or Swedish or German or whatever? So they lost sponsors over him. Unless he apologized, that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it took him a while to apologize.
I'll bet.
But it's hard to apologize when you mean it. You know, and that happens in Hollywood all the time.
Yeah.
But so here's my question, Don. And you've been out of the educational system for how many years now? Are you on your phone?
No.
Oh, you're fidgeting with the cord there. Okay.
Yeah, no, the... my last teaching was in 1975.
That's a while ago.
It is.
Yeah. But how long have you been out of education?
Well, I've never really been out of it. I'm still writing about it right now all the time.
And when's the last time you got a paycheck as an educator or an administrator?
Probably 1998.
Wow. That's a long time ago.
Yeah, it is.
Holy cow, that's 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I've been pouting ever since. In that I hate retirement. I mean, it's not the money. I have retirement money. It's the platform. It's the job. You know, being involved. And I wake up in the morning now. I have all the same anxieties that I've ever had, but nobody wants to hear about them now. And before, they didn't have any choice.
You're such an honest man. By the way, the Wisconsin teacher I was telling you about, one of the questions was, what about your pension? He said, that's in place, and I hope I can stick it out until he said 57. And that took me aback. 57? You can retire at 57? I know, at the air traffic control and other post office and all that, you can leave pretty early. But so in regards to your being somewhat bored, I suppose, with your retirement.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of anything to do, join clubs, organizations?
I'm a terrible volunteer. I'm much more an advocate. And it the things that I am really trying to advocate in the writing that I do right now, in a blog that I've been writing in for quite a long time, doesn't have organizations. retired teachers really don't have much in mind about doing anything other than, you know, greeting each other and being part of the alumni, so to speak. Retired union people, they don't have a place for past presidents to be a part of, you know, getting involved with the organization. Like I'm as foreign to the MEA or Education Minnesota as the average person on the street. If I walked in a building there, I don't think anybody would remember that, would know who I was. The teachers are terrible about building a legacy. You know, I guess it's because they're hired and they work in a system and then they move on and they're in a classroom and then they're out and somebody else is there. So that there are those handful of people that have been around for 35 years and they have a celebration that they retire, tell them to get out, or goodbye. But the remaining an active party is difficult if you're trying to do it at your own beckoning, you know, at your own time, what you want to do, because there really isn't anywhere that I really belong.
Well, I would imagine then that when you woke up this morning, you said, hey, I've got some place to go.
Yes.
And something to do.
Yes, that's right.
You know, and
it's a big deal in my life coming here.
Well, isn't that something? You know, 40 years ago, you wouldn't have had this much time to sit
right.
down and chew. Well, yeah. I've always, I assume that we belong to a mutual admiration society.
Yes.
And I always got a kick with Don Hill here. You do have a legacy for older people. And by older people, I'm going to have to say Cindy Shad.
Oh, yeah.
She's now an older person.
Yes, she is. It's hard to believe. But
when I bring her name up is because she was very active in your water show.
Yes.
And a lot of people have never heard of it.
Right.
Let alone been part of it. Oh, yeah. I did run into a guy, Ray Medved, last night, and Bruce Nelson.
Oh, okay.
Remember Bruce?
Yes.
I think it's Bruce.
I don't know.
The Nelson kid that did the comic diving.
Oh, okay,
yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Lived right by the pool.
Yep.
Lived in my backyard.
Anyhow,
they would remember those great water shows.
Sure. I'm sure, yeah.
And
I can remember Paul Stoughton, orchestra leader at the high school here, lived across the street from the swimming pool, and he said that he was he said he really appreciated my choice of music, but he didn't appreciate stopping in the middle and hear me screaming at people and then starting it over again.
Was he on fifth or was he on seventh?
Seventh.
Yeah. Okay.
And but anyway, they've got great memories. In fact, yesterday I was driving along, and up pops on the radio Percy Faith, one of the songs that I use a lot of his stuff. And it's hard to believe that if you talk about who I am and what I was, it's hard to believe that the head football coach was also spent a lot of time choreographing women swimming.
Well, and kids. And diving and all that.
Yes, yeah. Well, putting on a show was always a big deal for
me. Oh, man. We've told this story before, but I can't presume everybody heard it.
Right.
And it's a great story.
Okay.
When the JCs helped you with your show, you know, with funding and manpower.
Right, right.
There was a connection. You built a scaffolding. It was about two stories high or more.
Yeah.
And on the Fifth Street side of the pool, the old pool, and we had headsets, and we were connected. Man. And this one guy's job was to listen to you.
Right.
And you would say, bring out the tiny tots or whatever.
Yes, right.
And then he just took his headphones off and he said, I can't take it anymore. Said, what's wrong? He said, man, this guy, he keeps yelling and swearing at me. And I said, that's Donis. I'll take that job. Hey, Don, it's Wayne. Yeah, well, get them. It was so funny.
Yeah.
You were so intense. It was unbelievable.
Well,
it was a great show.
You put on a performance like that that you never can rehearse, because what you're doing, bringing together, you rehearse all this individual numbers, but never putting the whole program together. So tying it all together was kind of a tough situation. Yeah.
And I remember the Valerial Girls and jumping into the pool and these little tiny donut lifesavers. They were about 2 feet tall. And now they're moms, you know.
Sure.
I'll tell you. It's fun to reminisce here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. We are the one that started in September of 1968. What year did you get out of high school?
54.
So you must be 81?
85.
85?
Yeah.
Oh. Oh, 54. Okay. Never mind. I was comparing that to me in grade school.
Oh.
But I was in grade school at that time.
Yeah.
So are you okay? Are you physically doing good? Okay.
No. Oh yeah.
You're not.
Right. I don't have any major physical problems other than a little heart problem that I.
Little one.
It didn't turn out to be as exciting as we thought, but it's still there. But other than that, you know, I'm stiff in the morning and still think I could leap the fence, but I don't dare try.
Yeah. Do you walk old men do on ice?
Yes, I really do.
Remember when Danny Freeman used to pretend he was a little old man on an icy street?
Yes, yes.
And that's the way.
he had a lot of acts.
Yes, he did. The chair act.
He did,
That one broke me up.
Yeah. Steinicke. Yeah, he used to do a Japanese.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He put the rubber band around his eye. Yeah.
Today would be, it'd be very difficult to put him away for prejudice or whatever.
It's six minutes before 11 o'clock and a final break here on the Wayne Eddy Affair. Once again, my guest this morning is a former coach, former teacher, former head of the MEA in Rhode Island. Whatever you what did
EA,
you call
it? Okay. Education Association.
The Hens, right? Rhode Island Hens?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let us help you maximize your earnings with a certificate of deposit from Community Resource Bank. Invest in a 60-month CD at 2% or a 48-month at 1.75 annual percentage yield, or choose a 54-month bump option at 1.70% APY. Get the best deposit rates around with Community Resource Bank in Northfield, Cannon Falls, and Roseville. Good bankers, good friends. $25,000 minimum deposit required. Penalty for early withdrawal may reduce earnings. Other rates and terms are available. Member FDIC.
Don't let a dead battery leave you stranded this winter. When a warning light comes on, it may already be too late. Visit your Napa Auto Care Center for a battery check and make sure your battery is up to the challenge. Need a replacement? Your Napa Auto Care dealer can make it easier on your wallet with a Visa gift card valued at up to $20 on the purchase of a Napa Legend or Napa Premium battery. Visit Witt Brothers Service at 701 Division Street in downtown Northfield for full details.
Well, I suppose, Don, it would be a stupid or derelict of me. Hey, I haven't heard that word for a while. If I didn't ask the former Northfield Raider head football coach about the Super Bowl, but before we get to that, everybody says that where were you when the Minnesota Miracle happened with Diggs catching that touchdown pass? You watch that game?
Yes, I did. I did.
Now, as an old coach, how do you watch games? Not when I say old, as a former coach.
Yeah. Well, I've developed into a pretty obvious fan. I don't look at it technically like I used to. I still notice things technically, but I don't spend a lot of time. My brother, on the other hand, he still will describe in detail the last play and literally each of the 11 guys and what they did, and he drives me crazy.
I was going to say, fun to watch a game with them, huh?
Yeah, right. He's just an old coach that just won't quit. And, of course, he was more detailed about that than I ever was anyway. So
did you, were you watching the game at home or did you?
Yeah, at home, super, right.
Okay, so did you jump out of your chair?
No, I was really surprised, though. Yeah. I was really happy I was home because I could see it 20 times.
Yeah, and I did that with my wife, and she said after all the excitement was over, she said, well, why were you yelling, no, 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 while he was doing that? And I said, well, I wanted him to get out of bounds for the field goal. I didn't realize he had a clear path.
Yeah, yeah. So, well, it was a... exciting moment.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember getting up and yelling at Marilyn in the other room, you wouldn't believe what just happened.
Yeah. What about, I felt embarrassed with the Philadelphia game. I mean, they didn't show up. I just wish.
It was hard.
I mean, even in the game that they won against, New Orleans, yeah. I thought they weren't, you know, they weren't as good as they were the game before that.
Sure.
I wonder, is that overcoaching or?
I don't know. It's hard to gauge momentum. Even if you're coaching the junior high kids, there is momentum and you try to feed on it. And it goes all the way up through the pros. It is just amazing how the same people can look so different on the next play based on some kind of momentum that stirred a little bit extra in everybody and it just kind of drove into it. But I think the Vikings' problem was they were never quite as good as we thought they were. I think they were getting by with their opponents were helping them out fairly often. I thought the quarterback did an excellent job for what he was stuck with, but he wasn't the kind of take charge guy that you need on the bad day to just step in there and own it.
Yeah.
And we're going to see one of those, you know, in the finals with the Patriots. They have that kind of quarterback that can throw that last second thing right on the button, and it's like he stands in the pocket like he owns the place. You know, he just dares him to try to get him down. You know, it's an amazing guy.
And one of the things that I don't know if the Vikings invented it, but you know how at the stadium they'll raise their hand and clap above their head to the beat of a drum, and it has a crescendo, and they say skull,
skull,
skull.
Yeah.
Well, of course, now the Philly fans start doing foals, foals. Now, I don't know if that's an original skull clap for the Vikings, or they got it from some other team that did it, like the wave.
They did it. They got it from a soccer team someplace.
Oh,
I don't know which soccer team. They probably used skull. Probably came as a part of. They probably had a different word or something, but it's kind of an effective way to motivate a crowd, though. It really is.
Well, at first I thought I didn't get it. I thought, you know, there's no rhythm there. Well, they're speeding it up. I got it finally.
Yeah.
Well, okay. From the guy that enjoys watching professional football and not being terribly upset one way or the other, but still have that spirit and a little more knowledge than I do. So who are you picking and by what spread for Sunday?
Oh, I pick the Patriots. And, a touchdown maybe.
Okay.
7, probably. I think anyway, yeah. I think they on the I don't know, coaching, a coach and players and quarterback, they just, they kind of, it seems like they want it more than anybody else. They're greedy. You know, they're,